In a letter written on the 27th of July 1970, His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada wrote about the disappearance of his own guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Our own Srila Prabhupada wrote, "My Guru Maharaj liked very much publication of books rather than constructing big, big temples and creating some neophyte disciples. As soon as he saw that his neophyte disciples were increasing in number, he immediately decided to leave this world. To accept disciples means to take up the responsibility of absorbing the sinful reaction of life of the disciple." Why was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur unhappy with the increase in the number of neophyte disciples? We get a clue in Srila Prabhupada stating that the guru has to absorb the sinful reactions of the disciples. But I dare to venture that this cannot be all of the reason, because great devotees come to this world to do good for others into distress, even by accepting distress on their own part. As Lord Shiva states, we find in the 8th canto, chapter 7, verse 44 of Srimad Bhagavatam, "Tapyante loka tapena sadhava prayasho janaha paramaradhanam tadhi purushasya khilatmanaha." It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. You might have thought that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very happy with more and more devotees coming. His whole mission was to bring more and more people to Krishna consciousness. And it could be argued that, well, you can hardly expect that all of those who come, especially newcomers, are going to be very advanced. We might expect that the increase in devotees means preaching is being successful, even if many of them are neophytes. Creating neophyte disciples means they're not very advanced by definition, but they are chanting Hare Krishna, they're following some principles, and building temples maybe, participating in temple activities, becoming Krishna conscious. My analysis is that some disciples can be very troublesome and work against the principle, the very principle of pure devotion for which great acharyas come to this world to preach. Neophyte devotee, they're devotees, but they actually work against the principles of pure devotion. They work against the gift of the guru and work against him, because the principle of pure devotion is anyabhilashita shunyam jnanakamadhyanavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhaktirutama. Pure devotion begins with the resolution to go beyond all personal desires, to cultivate only acting for Krishna's pleasure. Now, if a neophyte devotee gets the idea of this anyabhilashita shunyata, then he quickly becomes a madhyamadhikari. He quickly comes to the platform in which advancement is the goal of the devotee's life. He's on the platform from which he can make real advancement. This is what the great acharyas who come to this world come to give. That's the bhakti-lata bij, to have the seed of pure devotional service, the desire, the clear goal to become completely purified from material desires and desires for impersonal salvation or even any salvation when we get very high. But especially if leaders are not on the platform, leaders among the devotees are not on the platform of anyabhilashita shunyata, then they mislead others and cause so many problems. Neophyte devotees lack the spirit of atmanivedana, giving ourselves mind, body, words, a whole identity, a whole being in the service of Krishna, which is the culmination of sharanagati, the whole process of advancement. It begins, the process of advancement begins when we have this desire, this anyabhilashita shunyata, this being free from other desires means to have the desire to fully give ourselves to Krishna. And that is what the process of sharanagati aims at. This is the platform of pure devotion. The process of sharanagati begins with, or it's essential to have within that, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. To do everything that is favorable for the service of Krishna and to reject everything unfavorable. But in today's world, it is very difficult to follow all these six angas of sharanagati, especially these first two, because the whole situation in the world is that people are living in the world, associating with non-devotees, picking up their attitudes or reinforcing the materialistic attitudes which are in the heart of the neophyte devotee. And even if you want to do everything favorable for devotional service, it's very difficult. For instance, many people will be told that when they go to work, don't wear tilak. Or they may not even think of wearing tilak to work, thinking that, well, people will criticize me. There's so much social pressure to do the wrong thing. It's hard to follow properly. Well, why initiate neophyte disciples at all if they're not going to follow properly, if they're not going to pick this up? In one sense, there is no need to initiate neophyte disciples because anyone can chant Hare Krishna anywhere. And probably many of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati were already chanting Hare Krishna, already identified themselves as devotees of Krishna in some way before he initiated them. By initiating them, he wanted to bring them to the clear path of Rupa Anuga Bhakti, rather than all the mixed up forms which were prevalent in Bengal at that time and still are. And also by initiating, that brings people to a commitment. Yes, I must chant so many times on the beads, a commitment to follow principles which will help them. But practically speaking, even if one follows these basic principles of chanting 16 rounds we have received from our Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he would say that those who are living in the temple, they should, or in the Chaitanya Mat, they should chant 64 rounds. And for others, he would just tell them to chant. But even with chanting, unless one really makes it one with one's heart, this idea of anyabhilashita shunya bhakti, really Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Kariya Aikya really tries to make the words of his guru, which are the words of pure devotional service, one with his heart, then even chanting Cheto Darpana Marjanam, it doesn't take place, or it can be very, very slow if we don't have the attitude of wanting to surrender to Krishna, to fully give ourselves to Krishna, which is the words of the guru. All the instructions are meant for that. Therefore, we're chanting Hare Krishna, which means, O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. But we don't really mean it. Or we have our own ideas, misconstrued ideas of what it means to surrender to Krishna. So one has to not only hear and chant, but be very particular to hear from pure devotees. Pure devotees means minimally those who have accepted the anyabhilashita shunya principle as the compass of their life, who speak in that mode, who act in that mode. Otherwise, one remains what we could call a committed neophyte. In other words, they have a filter on what they hear, knowledge filter. They hear and absorb what they like to hear, and they may politely or impolitely reject what they don't like to hear. So you can be initiated by a topmost devotee who gives the message of pure devotional service. But when he speaks the message of surrender to Krishna, only do what is favorable for Krishna's service, we reject that, or we try to explain it away, and we make some rationale not to follow it, or we pretend that we're following it, although we're not following. Neophyte means in materialistic consciousness, Kanishta Adhikari, which means only fit for executing devotional service in a very rudimentary way. Another term is Prakrita Bhakta, devotee, but on the material platform. And the material platform means Icha Dvesha Sumutena Dvanva Mohena Bharata. We're still cultivating material desires. We have Dvesha. We maintain the spirit of friends and enemies on the material platform, likes and dislikes on the material platform. In this way, we're illusioned in terms of I, me, and mine, and dualities, illusion. And neophyte devotee means there's deceptiveness is there. If he's pretending to be on a better platform than he is, he may pretend so well, mostly they actually feel I'm very advanced, but they're not actually surrendered. So they're called Prakrita Bhakta or Vaishnava Prai, Prai means almost, so almost a Vaishnava, getting there. So it's not to condemn anyone and everyone who's not on the pure devotional platform. We all come with, or most of us come with, a lot of material conditioning and misunderstandings, misidentification of ourselves as the body and the mind and the ego, material attachments, material desires. However, one should come to the guru like a blank slate, it said. Although it's not possible to be a totally blank slate, we have so many misunderstandings and impressions on our minds. But the idea is we should be ready to be reprogrammed, so to speak, by the guru, to hear the message of the guru with the clear intention to not superimpose on what the guru says our own preconceptions, to accept that my preconceptions are misconceptions, to accept ourselves as being ignorant and in need of instruction, and therefore to accept what the guru says with the understanding that whatever I think I know up to now is all wrong. That's why I came to the guru. It's not just, your name is, give the beads, Hari Bol, oh, now I'm an initiate devotee. But we have to have the intention to have our consciousness completely purified by the words from his lotus mouth, which are what Krishna wants me to hear. Sanatan Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way. Ke ami kene amai jare ta patrai. Who am I? Why am I suffering the threefold miseries? Iha nahi jani came on a hitohoi. I don't know what is for my benefit. He approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this humble mood, ideal mood of a disciple. So neophyte devotees means they're devotees. They're attracted to Krishna consciousness. They like Krishna consciousness. They like the beautiful form of the deity. They may take pleasure in doing deity worship at home. They like to chant Hare Krishna. Although it seems that many devotees prefer chanting in kirtan and they're less assiduous in their practice of chanting japa. The pious, they even may like to follow the rules, various rules. They may follow all these things. Although many of them, even when trying to follow, have trouble with the rules, following the rules, even basic rules like keeping out of illicit sex. Quite common at the present time in Vaishnava society is not wanting to and not following the rule of taking only Krishna prasad as our food, which makes it very difficult to advance just by this one thing. Makes it very difficult to advance even though we are chanting Hare Krishna. It's like doing something positive and negative at the same time, pouring fuel, petrol, into the fire to make it blaze up, and with the other hand, pouring water. So we're chanting Hare Krishna, positive thing, but then we do something which is against the principles of devotional service, to regularly take food not offered to Krishna or not offerable to Krishna for our own sense pleasure. It's much easier to bring many people into Krishna consciousness at a neophyte level than to preach and say that, hey, look, you want to be in this society? There are some things you have to follow. There's an ideal to aspire for. So we can bring many neophytes and keep them at the neophyte level. And they may even have the idea that I have to become a pure devotee. Of course, many neophytes think they're already pure devotees. They may say I have to give up material attachments. He may even do his Bhakti Shastra course and pass it, in which he writes about giving up material attachments. But the Chitete Kuriya Aikya, Guru Mukha Padmavakya, Chitete Kuriya Aikya, making the words of pure devotion one with the heart, it didn't happen, and he remains largely in the same consciousness as when he came, first of all, to the Guru's lotus feet, which means he didn't really come at all, which is why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that you can't see a sadhu with your eyes. Neophyte devotees are very interested in seeing a sadhu with their eyes, getting darshan, getting blessings, thinking that the blessings and seeing the guru, that's the main thing I need for my spiritual advancement, whatever their idea of spiritual advancement might be. definitely seeing a sadhu and getting the blessings are advantageous, but the real thing is to, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, is to hear the message of the guru. And he was very committed to that. He would give long lectures. And neophytes might not like to hear his message because the pure devotees speak in such a way to differentiate illusion from reality for the benefit of all, to differentiate between what should be done and what should not be done. And the neophyte has this attitude of wanting to continue with some pious sense gratification while practicing Krishna consciousness, following rules, maybe taking prasad also. It's not that by taking prasad, you having that commitment, it's a very good commitment, but still in so many ways, you can have a materialistic outlook. For instance, thinking that earning money is very important, having a respectable position in society is important. It's hard to get free of this if we're working in materialistic society where everyone thinks that earning money is important. And for Grihastha devotees, it is important, but to overemphasize this or to put so much emphasis on it keeps us in material consciousness. Another way, we also see that neophytes tend to judge external appearances. Srila Prabhupada was aware of that. That's one major reason why he wanted a few big temples constructed in India to establish the importance of his movement. Because constructing temples attracts many people. Constructing temples in India didn't increase the importance of who Srila Prabhupada was or his message, but it drew attention to his message because neophyte devotees don't understand just by hearing, or they may not give importance to a sadhu unless he has some big institution, some big temple. They judge by externals. So when they see a big temple, a big establishment, a big institution that's well respected, then they respect it. And they're more likely to hear. But the real thing is to hear that all this big establishment, the big temple, it's not in and of itself a sign of devotion. It's a matter of attitude. It's hard for neophyte devotees to hear the message of pure devotion. They have a very strong knowledge filter. Therefore, pure devotees are supposed to speak very strongly to try to cut through that maya. One verse that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quite often quoted is from Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavatam. Tato du sangam utsrija satsu sajeta buddhiman santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. An intelligent person should reject all bad association and instead take the association of saintly devotees whose words cut the excessive attachment of one's mind, cut it off altogether. By hearing the strong words of sadhus who speak about how this material world is temporary and full of suffering, who speak that trying to be happy in this material world is incompatible with actual Krishna consciousness. If we speak these things, little bit maybe, but speak it too much too strongly, then neophyte devotees tend to become disturbed. They may reject their guru or try to find someone who knows better or who pats their material attachments rather than trying to cut them. They may have a good taste for hearing about Krishna as long as it's stories, pastimes, leelas. As long as that hearing makes them feel good, as long as it doesn't challenge their attachments. But the words of a sadhu have to cut if those words are going to have their effect. If the spirit of pure devotees who are described in Krishna Leela is really to lodge in the heart, then the materialistic mentality has to be cut out to bring the neophyte to the platform of making rapid advancement. So what happens when the number of neophyte devotees increases is that we have a society of devotees dominated by people who are in mixed Krishna consciousness, mixed Krishna consciousness with materialistic consciousness, who judge everything in terms of their own pleasure. It means they tend to be envious of others and interested in position, prestige, and they fight among each other. We have heard that the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, some of the leaders, they were doing politics against each other. In this letter, which I quoted from Srila Prabhupada about his Guru Maharaj being disturbed about seeing his neophyte disciples increasing in number, Srila Prabhupada wrote, "At the present moment in our ISKCON campus, politics and diplomacy have entered. Some of my beloved students, on whom I counted very, very much, have been involved in this matter, influenced by Maya." So Srila Prabhupada was facing the same problem. It's leaders, especially, engaging in politics and diplomacy. And if we are to be honest, if we go a little deep into the functioning of Srila Prabhupada's movement at the present time, we can't deny that politics and diplomacy are endemic, and it seems, well, that's just the way it is. It's just accepted as normal. But politics and diplomacy are the business of demons. Prahlad didn't want to learn what he was being taught. He didn't want to hear about it, about all this politics and diplomacy, because that's for demons. Now, in the management of this Vaishnava institution, there will be disagreements, and sometimes very strong disagreements. And managers have to tell people to do things that they may not want to do. They may have to try to engage them in ways that they may not like. And managers are often maligned. But it doesn't mean that everyone who's a leader or a manager is engaged in politics and diplomacy. It's there, and much of what might appear to be politics and diplomacy is also just trying to manage the best way you can. Managing is not an easy service. It's difficult for most who haven't done it to appreciate that. It's not very easy to take charge and try to engage and facilitate so many people, devotees, with so many different ideas and mentalities and outlooks. And not everyone can take the stress and the strain of taking responsibility. So that I'm adding. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was disturbed by politics, what he saw as politics and diplomacy, which are attitudes in neophyte devotees. And how does that manifest? Well, leaders may be in the consciousness of thinking, this temple is mine, this zone is mine, these disciples are mine, these facilities are mine, 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 mine. Or thinking that they're entitled, they utilize the facilities for their own comfort. And if they're married, then the special facilities for their family and children, all in the name of preaching Krishna consciousness. And if anyone objects to this, they'll say, oh, you're against Prabhupada. Although it might appear that they themselves are working against Prabhupada's mission in the name of being leaders within it. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was dismayed upon seeing the number of his neophyte disciples increase. But there are those we see at the present time. You see, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was dismayed. Srila Prabhupada at one point at least was dismayed. And the same kind of thing is going on. It's always going to be there. There are always going to be devotees who think that, well, this is what Krishna consciousness is all about. We have to increase the number of followers, whatever. We shouldn't preach too clearly about pure devotional service and tell people that they shouldn't eat kami food and they shouldn't be so much concerned with their career and their material advancement, because if we preach like that, then we'll get less people joining us. Quality is reduced in the name of quantity, and everything is measured by how much money you have, how big a temple you have, how big a zone you have, how many disciples you have, even how many books you distribute. Can also be in a neophyte mentality, even engaged in that service. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said, and Srila Prabhupada echoed him in saying that, I would be happy to have one disciple who is a pure devotee. I would think my mission is successful. Considerations of quantity and quality. It's not that, well, we're just going to try and find one pure devotee. We try to preach widely. That's why we've got Harinam Sankirtan. We distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. So what's the balance between quantity and quality? Achyutananda was with Srila Prabhupada in India in the early 1970s when ISKCON really hadn't got going at that time in India. It really is now. And they visited the ashrams of two of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers in Navadvip. And after visiting Achyutananda, I think he was Swami at the time. I'm not sure if he'd taken sannyas or not. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, he said that, well, in one ashram, they didn't have many devotees, but they seemed to be a lot more serious. Whereas in another, they had many devotees, but they seemed to be more frivolous. I'm paraphrasing. So which is better? What should we aim for, quality or quantity? Srila Prabhupada said, both. How do you balance that? Neophytes, if they get in positions of responsibility, they may be good administrators, they may be good in sadhana, but still maintain the neophyte mentality, and in this way, work against the mission of pure devotional service, even unknown to themselves. And they would protest it very vehemently if you tried to tell them. But what they're doing is they're inhibiting anyone who wants to promote pure devotional service free from any personal desire. So what is the balance between quality and quantity? Srila Prabhupada recognized that not everyone's going to be a fully dedicated, pure devotee. Still, we want to give Krishna consciousness to as many people as possible, which is one of the major reasons why Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce Varnashram Dharma, in which there is social stratification, not necessarily spiritual. There's material stratification. But the spiritual leaders should clearly be in a different category to those who are practicing at some level within Varnashram, which is why Srila Prabhupada wanted to create a new class of brahmanas who are clearly in a different category to others by their spiritual knowledge, their wisdom, their renunciation, their detachment from material sense gratification, their detachment from the desire for career enhancement, even in the name of Krishna consciousness. Brahmanas, Vaishnav Brahmanas with a genuine taste in Krishna consciousness. We want to bring everyone to the highest platform, and there should be a class of Brahmanas to lead. Unfortunately, almost all the leadership of ISKCON is at best apathetic toward Srila Prabhupada's instructions about Varnashram Dharma, and some seem to be even antagonistic. They say, well, you can't do it. Don't even talk about it. Well, practically speaking, it does seem impossible to establish Varnashram Dharma. But then it's the order of our Guru Maharaj, and with the order comes empowerment if we have the faith and the determination and the dedication to do it. Is it impossible? No. Why would Srila Prabhupada stress it so much if it's impossible? It seems to be extremely difficult to do it, but if we all get together, put our brains together, and pray to Srila Prabhupada very sincerely, surely Srila Prabhupada, Paramatma, Krishna in the heart, will give us the intelligence about how to go forward. Actually, Srila Prabhupada gave all the plans already. We have to follow them, implement them intelligently. If we don't, then we have no other choice but to work within the social system that we live in, that's all around us, which is demoniac and dragging everyone to hell. It does require great faith and courage to follow everything that Srila Prabhupada said. It's easier to take out the parts that we find convenient and try to forget the others that we don't find convenient. And if others within Srila Prabhupada's followers try to remind us about the parts we don't like, for instance, Varnashram Dharma, then we just ignore or try to stamp them out. Srila Prabhupada had to struggle so much to do what he did in the 1950s. He started a movement in Jhansi with the aim of Jhansi is not very well known, not very economically, politically significant town in North India. So Srila Prabhupada started something with the aim of doing a worldwide movement from there. It was smashed by outsiders. Then Srila Prabhupada spent some time trying to work with his godbrothers, and he could have remained within the mat of pretty much any one of his godbrothers and lived a peaceful, uneventful life and gone back to Godhead. But instead, he went alone again. He was alone in Jhansi. Alone means without any of his godbrothers. He spent some time trying to work with various of his godbrothers. But then again, he went on his own. He went to live in Vrindavan for writing his books. He was doing his Back to Godhead magazine. He had no income, but he was preaching and he depended on Krishna. Rather than staying in his godbrother's muds, he wanted to do something really exceptional. He came out alone and struggled again to print his Back to Godhead magazine and later produce books. No one was encouraging him. Yes, here and there might have been some appreciation, but in general, it seems his godbrothers thought he was a little eccentric for having all these grandiose plans and maybe a bit bothersome because he would get on his godbrother's case for not preaching, and they thought, well, we are preaching, and they were, but not to the level that Srila Prabhupada envisioned. So let's get this all in perspective. On the one hand, I'm saying, and of course it's not just me that's saying, that neophytes can't make proper advancement. But from another perspective, whatever they're doing in Krishna consciousness, they're chanting, even if it's Nama Bhas, even if it's bordering on Nama Parada, They're coming to the temple, they're offering some donation, they're taking prasadam. Whatever they're doing in Krishna consciousness, they're coming closer to Krishna. That's to their eternal benefit. And they're in a much better position than those who don't take to Krishna consciousness at all. And of course, it's not that everyone who is not living in a Varnashram community is a neophyte, or that everyone who's a Grihastha working in a job in the cities and chanting Hare Krishna is a neophyte. But as Srila Prabhupada stated in one of his purports, not a very often quoted purport, he said that those who are householders, their spiritual advancement is very slow or almost nil. Phew, can understand why it's not quoted much. But doesn't that contradict the examples of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Parikshit Maharaj? Srila Prabhupada himself, was he a neophyte in family life? Not at all. One can become fully advanced, of course, in any station of life. It may be that there are many grihasthas who are more advanced than sannyasis. It all depends on the attitude. As Srila Prabhupada stated in his preface to the Nectar of Instruction, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. But my personal perspective, and you can say, well, I'm just a big neophyte, who am I to talk? But my perspective is that we do see many devotees remain in a neophyte consciousness, and that as a movement, we tend to encourage that because we don't have an alternative. If we don't have a Varnashram alternative, then people have to live their lives on the template of Karmi society, and it's very contaminating. Although maybe we don't see that because we just take it as normal. We grew up in it, everyone else is doing it, but devotees are supposed to be different. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur felt disturbed by seeing an increase in the number of his neophyte disciples. Sometimes he spoke about the real mercy of the guru and how the guru sometimes cheats his disciples. If a guru sees that his disciple is not only neophyte, but committedly neophyte, he's not ready to accept the instructions that they really need to hear, the guru may speak to them in a way just to encourage them to continue, even though their level is not very high. Otherwise, if you tell them what they really need to hear, they might just go away. They need a lot of encouragement to keep them going. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also said that he may encourage disciples by giving them titles and praising them in public, praising them to their face so they feel encouraged, or at least they may not cause him so much trouble. However, the real mercy of the guru is open to those who are willing to surrender. Atmanivedana. And if the number of neophyte disciples increase, then the guru may find himself talking in a roundabout way more and more and more to mollycoddle the neophytes so he doesn't get to speak his real message as much or as clearly as he wants to. You may feel, well, there are all these neophytes around me. I have to speak in a soft way, compromised way. Almost you could say diplomatically. Yes, diplomatically. Dealing with them diplomatically to help to encourage them to go on with devotional service. He keeps the neophytes pacified, but at the same time, his real mission tends to become covered over and compromised by his own disciples. So what happens when the number of neophyte disciples increase is that the actual mission tends to become obscured even in the presence of the guru. Thus, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati saw his neophyte disciples increasing in number, he decided to leave this world. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyas Chakripasindhu.